Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, unless the Fluoride Action Network can stop that. But apparently we're next on the list after they went go and get it out of the capital, hopefully. And, you know, the thing about New Zealand is, ladies and gentlemen, it's remote. But it's not isolated. And New Zealanders are a very worldly people and often well-travelled. In fact, one-fifth of New Zealanders that currently walk the earth today, I think there's about 5 million, are actually living overseas. So, if you are listening to this program, understand that this is my form of international travel, namely because air travel is very expensive and I'm a broke-ass activist. And my very special guest is Luke McKee, coming at us from a undisclosed location due to his unfortunate harassment and whatnot. Luke, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you. Yeah, it's funny you're talking about fluoridation of the water supply. There was a scandal in Sydney. There's a website called tapsydney.com.au made by Sydney Water, where and a scandal came out. They spent $1.5 million to have a promotion to plug cafes that sell you fluoridated tap water with your coffee.
Unbelievable.
It was in the Daily Telegraph.
What are you here to talk about with us today here?
Well, what I'm here to talk about today is something I predicted would happen in an interview on 2GB 5 months ago, that the people who persecuted me out of Australia using exotic gang laws would take it to the next step and make it a crime. See, I'm not opposed on... Gay marriage is a more complicated issue than people give it credit. In Australia, they're making a law that will make it a crime for churches and mosques to discriminate. So the cover story is for that Catholic children, you know, who are gay in Christian schools could be expelled. But really, it could actually be used against people for not officiating gay marriage. And there's an interview on 2GB about the consequences of this law and how it's a human rights abuse, because the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights is a section called Freedom of Thought and Religion. And state-sponsored religious persecution is wrong. So to get started, would you like to hear that interview on 2GB, giving the lowdown?
Absolutely.
Okay, here we go.
Good morning, Simon. Good morning. How are you?
Hi, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm fine, I'm fine. Sore throat, though, is a flu going around.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to inject one new issue for your listeners tonight about the government's anti-discrimination laws they're trying to put in federally now.
Oh, yeah.
And add some more information about smart meters, what they're capable of through Wi-Fi dialing into your home appliances, as admitted on the Victorian government's fact sheet about it. Not a conspiracy if it comes from the government.
Oh, yeah,
you can look it up. So first of all, I'd like to talk about exemptions to the Anti-Discrimination Act. And that's a big issue now because certain lobbyists are trying to unexempt religious organizations. But the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights talks about freedom of thought and religion. And it also says men and women may marry regardless of and list of things. That's from the UN. And I want to mention that in history, royalty exempted themselves from common man's law.
Yeah.
And guess who is exempt from the New South Wales Anti-Discrimination Act?
Well,
someone.
We don't have any royalty here.
Well, let me read from the LawLink website.
Yeah.
New South Wales Anti-Discrimination Board. Exemptions from the Anti-Discrimination Act. Okay? It's, now, in the Act, the word heterosexual is not listed, so I'm talking about a blanket exemption here. I'll read verbatim now.
Yeah.
If you want to target a job, service, or program to gay men or lesbians, you don't need an exemption. This is because it's not against the law to discriminate against people who are not homosexual. It's only against the law to discriminate against people who are homosexual.
Are you still reading from it, or is that your summation of it?
That is verbatim from the LawLink New South Wales Government website, and I have read the Act, and the word heterosexual doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So if hypothetically, if a police officer was sent to your house under the Gay and Lesbian Liaison Officer program, who was of that persuasion by a gay neighbour who followed the instructions from the New South Wales Police website saying get to know your local Gay and Lesbian Liaison Officer, not report crime.
Yeah.
And hypothetically, if you were discriminated against, the Anti-Discrimination Board says you are a victim of lawful discrimination. This happened.
This does happen.
This happened, yeah. If you Google 60C Crimes Act, you can see the whole story. But, you know, I actually mentioned this online and talked about, you know, now they're pushing for religious exemptions to be non-exempted. And I want to talk about the consequences of that change. Some people haven't thought about a few things when they're pushing through this law. And I made some comments on Facebook, and I got some interesting responses from it. Now, what I wrote was all politically correct. let me see. So the Anti-Discrimination Board does really have an exemption for gays. Why do gays want to unexempt churches and be exempt themselves? That's discrimination. You know, gays above God under law, and I'll give the link to the website, and, you know, it's not a conspiracy. And then I talked about, now, gays already have the power to sue church-owned and mosque-owned facilities.
Oh, yeah.
Because there was a case in Victoria called Way Out versus the Brethren Church in VCAT that went to the Supreme Court and set a legal precedent. So the only reason the proposed law reform is to, you know, is to sue what happens inside a place of worship. Now, what goes on in a place of worship is marriage, also known as equal marriage now, and sermons. So the gay lobby already had, I mean, Are you familiar with the case of Way Out versus Brethren?
No, I'm not familiar with that one, no.
Okay, it was on Stateline and ABC in Victoria, but they took off the video, but everyone can look it up.
Oh, yeah.
A gay youth suicide prevention charity wanted to bring kids from the countryside into a church-owned camp and have sleepovers with, you know, pubescent, gay teenagers.
Yeah.
And, you know, it went to the court, and after...
But the church presumably said you can't do that.
Well, they said, we don't have a problem with you being gay. We have a problem with you promoting homosexuality to young children. And on those grounds, it's on our religious viewpoint, you can't use our land. And they were told by the magistrate that because it is not a place of worship, they cannot discriminate.
Wow.
Okay, so this actually happened.
So one magistrate can be a crucial part of a revolution.
Yes, and that's what happened. So the gays are still pushing for more power. So they've already got the reform they want. They can't put the cover story that, you know, Catholics can't hold hands and kiss at lunch without being expelled, all those stories like that, because they've already got that right to sue and the anti-discrimination board. So, the Minister of Appeals tribunals and so on and so forth if you appeal. So, now, what would happen if a mosque was approached and asked to do a gay marriage? Now, this is controversial, but the gay lobby had put a Islamic float in the Mardi Gras. So we do know this is in the realms of possibility that the imam and the trustees of the mosque would have to choose between doing the Islamic crime of subverting Islam and moderate Muslims...
Yeah.
would punish them with death, even overseas, with a fatwa?
Yeah.
Or do they settle and pay the homosexual for victimising them by discriminating and exercising their United Nations?
This is going to be a cash cow for some people.
Well,
I've got to go, Simon.
Hey.
Yeah, I got that, yep.
So I couldn't use my real name on 2GB because they don't like me. But what do you think? That's Brian Rilshaw on 2GB in Australia at nights. And he actually interviews Anne Blessington and fights Agenda 21. He's one of the few conservative radio hosts that is sometimes worth listening to. Sometimes.
Well, you know, nobody's worth listening to all the time. And then in the government's case, they're generally just not worth listening to at all. And in the police case, it's generally the same.
Oh, it's especially with the government broadcasters like the ABC. Last time on my show, on your show, we exposed the ABC persecuting an Aboriginal teenager, also accused of the 60C gang law they're using against me. And that's you chose the best highlight from the last appearance. But now the ABC's taken it a step further. They've interviewed a gay man about his journey to adopt he bought a Russian child, and that's the reason why Russia has banned all adoption for any single parent in any country that does gay marriage. That's from Putin. And all of America can never adopt an American, a Russian child again over an American and an Australian Vietnamese guy. Using their power they got in Australia with gay adoption. That's the third or fourth great achievement of the New South Wales Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby on their homepage, History About Us timeline. The first and greatest being getting gay apartheid policing, where all heterosexual police are deemed inferior to the officers in charge of investigation if a homosexual points the finger. So it's mandated gay biased if anyone accused of a crime by a homosexual. And sometimes, like my case, it's not one officer's, but two officers decided in unison it's better to pervert the course of justice than pick up an innocent man's CCTV alibi that would exonerate me, the heterosexual, and incriminate a homosexual false witness. And the gay neighbour in my saga, who's R.J. Randall, who was arrested for same-sex domestic violence, I had no negative contact with her. We all heard last time the story was she was just merely a proxy for an illegal immigrant after a criminal justice bridging visa that would enable make her legal immigration status lawful again, and then you can marry off that to stay. So we rehashed my article. We're talking about the new law reforms in Australia, and I've traced it back to its roots. in the Fabian from the Fabian Society in England and the Labour Party. And there's a next segment. We'll play a clip from 60 Minutes USA, chronology of that, and showing that principals were running away and fleeing England to go to Australia. And now the last bastion of independent education is now going to be taken over. And the Reverend Fred Niles, I'm not affiliated with him at all, because, of course, he voted for 60C Crimes Act because he thought the bikies would... was an anti-bikie gang law, and he's against the bikies, so he was conned and he voted for this law. But he retweeted me on Twitter just before my Twitter account got shut down. Anyway, the people who shut my Twitter account down, I believe, was the ABC for talking about this radio interview they did. The guy was campaigning for gay marriage on his American university homepage, writing papers for gay marriage, and then the purpose of gay marriage and gay adoption for him was to abuse children. So what are your thoughts about that?
Well, child abuse is kind of mandated globally, and I believe there's a large company, what's it called, DynCorp, which was recently indicted for a massive child trafficking, sex trafficking sort of scam. On top of that, not only is this... My personal belief is that there is a multi-billion-dollar industry of child kidnapping and human trafficking going around that is indeed mandated by higher authorities and kept protected by it. So if you start trying to expose it, these people who do lose their homes, lose their kids, lose their lives sometimes. And in terms of the homosexual agenda, just bear in mind, of course, we're not talking about all homosexuals. This is kind of like, just like a conspiracy with, say, Freemasonry, for example. You look at say, the Supreme Council of the 33rd degree. There's 99 men who are in the 33rd degree, 99 men in the know. And then there's millions upon millions upon millions of Freemasons who have no freaking clue whatsoever. So let's say there's a homosexual conspiracy kind of like that, where there'd be a certain chunk of them in the know and trying to subvert the normal course of justice and perhaps attempting to have some kind of legal restraint on anybody that might criticise their crimes and so on and so forth. And then as a result, whenever anybody tries to expose said agenda, oh, you're homophobic. Isn't that
also
perfect?
That's 60C, mate, crime of obtaining information on corrupt police, and that's a wildcard whistleblower execution framework.
All right. Well, Luke McKee is my guest, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. This show is listener-supported, so if you like the fact that we get on different activists, whistleblowers, and spend late nights in like three late nights in a row trying to get documentaries cut together for activists who don't have any video editing skill and have nobody else in the entire fracking country who cares enough to actually put the time and effort in to ensure that their words get out. If you value that service that is being conducted for the community, and I'm serious about this, if you value that, please go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. There is a bank account number there. You can set up an automatic payment for any amount you wish. The average is $5 a month, sorry. Or you can use PayPal if you don't like to use the bank account numbers because PayPal takes a cut off of each and every transaction. And if you'd prefer that all of that funding go to new equipment and exposing scumbaggery, paying my internet and power and rent and food and so on and so forth, just the basics. I don't want to live high on the hog. It's just, I don't know. Basically, all I want to do is enjoy my life by exposing scumbaggery and helping the people who actually need help. That's what I want to do. So if you want to support me in doing that mission that I have been doing for many years now, please do so. Go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, subscribe, make an automatic payment today. And if you don't want to make an automatic payment, if you're like many of the people around the world that are living under a global banking cartel tyranny, and you do not have the financial security to give something regularly, just do a one-off donation of $5 or $20. Now, my very special guest is Luke McKee. Welcome back.
All right, on what you just said, if you're against global banker tyranny, get into Bitcoin. It's getting a lot of support now. It just keeps growing and growing. No bank fees, and that works. You can even cash it in New Zealand, I think. And, I also want to do a plug for my YouTube channel, which is the videos of shows I've been on and some ABC news stories that I've recaptioned, one of them being church camp sued for not allowing underage gay teen sex talk and gay mentors sleepover, and the other one being, which is very popular now, ABC accidentally adored child rapist boy love network member as model father, and lots of links on that video. And I'm very angry at the ABC for taking out all my Twitter accounts. So I feel like I want to inject a conspiracy theory in here, but would you let me?
This show's all about it. Well, before you do, I was just thinking ABC needs to go through some rebranding and call themselves ABS, standing for absolute bullshit, you know?
Well, it's really funny. When I downloaded the video from their website before, they titled it on actually the file name you download from their MPEG media streaming site, 7:30 Child Sex. What can I say? You know, it's on their 7:30 Facebook page is where I snapped it from. We're not homophobic here. I was recently watching CNN, you know, on the DVB broadcast here in Vietnam, and I saw I can't remember his name, but a very faint, the man of the hour for the gay rights lobby in America who got the victory in the Supreme Court. And he said, you know, none of the gay people, they cared about gay marriage. It wasn't an issue until George Bush himself made his 2005 election campaign. When I was in America, I saw it. I was there. I will stop gay marriage. Give me the mandate to kill 7 million Iraqis. And, look what happened. So he said that's why the gay lobby jumped on board with him with his court case. And he said the First Amendment rights of all Americans need to be protected. The religious groups that oppose us need to have their rights and freedoms protected. So even homosexuals in Australia, like Stephen Pickels from the third biggest radio station in Sydney, 2SER, who had his show pulled after interviewing me, who said he supports my cause, and, you know, famous gay lobbyists in America, they think what the Australian gay lobby is doing, making, you know, homosexual vilification law and non-exempting religious organisations and being above the law themselves. I mean, when I went to the Anti-Discrimination Board, and I actually put their refusal letter on my Scribd site, and if people want to interact with me, they can go to my Facebook site, facebook.com/greensvale. That's because the Greens, Lee Rhiannon, a gay rights activist, the first person to put gay marriage in New South Wales, a proposal for it, said that only corrupt police would use 60C Crimes Act. And Fabian Socialist Labor Peter Breen, MP, said if this law existed 10 years prior, the 60C gang law that's ruined my life, Tim Anderson, the man framed with the Hilton bombing, I think he's probably a COINTEL pro guy that got framed, would still be in jail.
I just love the irony there. A COINTEL pro guy who got framed.
Well, look, it happens all the time. Like the first World Trade Center bombing, it came out the FBI had run the whole operation. I mean, it happens all. That's how they do it.
Well, in fact, the bomber of the first World Trade Center bombing actually recorded his conversations with the FBI, and it turns out that he thought he would be doing a mock bombing for them. The FBI said, no, we're going to replace the fake bombs with real bombs.
Yeah, well, I contacted Tim Anderson, and he quickly banned me because he's a hardcore... look, I don't have a problem with lefty people, but it's going too far now that everyone else's rights are being infringed upon. So Tim Anderson himself blocked me on the internet. I said, hey, I'm accused of a law that, you know, your name was brought up to say why it shouldn't exist. Do you want to talk about it? And, you know... He blocked me. But the reason New South Wales Police doesn't have a special branch like the English Scotland Yard crew do is because of Justice Yeldon. We had a Royal Commission into paedophilia, and it took a Member of Parliament, I think Marina someone, a woman, to come up and expose him. He ran all the child abuse charities, one of the main child sexual abuse charities, and he was a gay paedophile. And Special Branch was shut down because he was a judge ruling on all the terrorism trials, and they gave him a free pass to rape children so people accused of terrorism could be framed. And that's why there's no Special Branch in New South Wales. Everyone knows it. So, I'm not pushing forward.
Didn't you have a recording that you wanted to play this segment?
Oh, yes. I have. It's broken up into little parts. It's 60 minutes... America talking about the origin of this far left, of the Fabian Society in England, and what they did in England, and even shows principals fleeing England to go to Australia, of all places, the other bastion of Labour, to get away from it. So yeah, this is what it's all about. It's not gay people. It's the militant homosexual gay mafia lobby that is pushing their historic agenda on the rest of us. Gay people shouldn't be accountable for their leaders, but gay people should try and get more balanced, more sensible leaders, like that guy who was on CNN, who got the gay marriage, you know, in the Supreme Court. And he was a conservative.
Personally, it sounds to me like it's not necessarily homosexual leaders. It's actual just a very small clique of homosexual Satanists who believe that they can gain power through rape and child abuse.
In Australia, there are three ones I'm going to point out. If your listeners type Sydney Star Observer, which is a gay newspaper, and Meet Your Greens, that's Kate Flanagan at the Greens and David Shoebridge pushing for this new law to sue churches. That first came up on the radar in 2010. Then Senthil and Raj, who is the head of Amnesty New South Wales. Obviously, Amnesty won't help a refugee like me, because all their leaders are gay. He wrote a story on thepunch.com.au saying, the righteous are feasting on religious freedoms. We need to sue them now. Look at their handiwork. Rachel Evans, leader of the Socialist Alliance Party of New South Wales, which I used to be a member before I woke up. I only went along with them because they're the biggest crowd in the Stop Cheney protests in 2006. That was an interesting protest because the police arrested the tranny cop street parade group for the crime of looking too much like the real special gay police, crime of impersonating a police officer, a month after they raided a rock gig at the Metro in Sydney and pulled Jay Stone, a lead guitarist for some band, off the stage for just wearing a police T-shirt on top, you know, a police uniform shirt, you know, when he's doing his gig. And both cases they lost, but not with cost. People had to pay all the legal fees for the crime of dressing up like cops and doing dancing on the street in the street process. So I helped the leftists the other day. I gave Occupy Sydney the address of the Lord Mayor, Clover Moore. And it's her henchman, who's in the Mardi Gras, Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras seat of Paddington, who has put forward a bill that that radio interview you heard on 2GB was 5 months ago. It's now reality. Alex Greenwich, MP, has pushed for a bill to fully non-exempt all religious organisations from the Anti-Discrimination Act. I have contacted his office, and they're refusing to release the bill until the very last second it hits the floor in the Parliament. Okay, so pretty much it's across the board, all the gay leaders, the Liberal gay leaders, the Greens, Labor, they've all got the same agenda, and it's a state-sponsored human rights abuse. And the gay people keep chanting, gay rights is human rights, gay rights is human rights. Well, why don't you want to be equal, Spunks? Why don't you want to be equal? Why don't you want to non-exempt yourselves from the Anti-Discrimination Act before you non-exempt religious organisations? It's a disaster. So, I'll play the first intro from 60 Minutes. It's broken into small segments.
How many minutes is
it? It's only five or 6 minutes in a few seconds.
We've already run out of time on the segment, mate. There's
51
only 3 minutes
seconds.
Left. 51
okay,
seconds?
Go. They're broken into small portions. Have a listen.
I wonder why we've turned Big Ben into a cuckoo clock. Well, the name of the story is the Loony Left, a group holding power in Britain's inner cities whose policies many believe are aimed at destabilizing both the party and the nation. The party is the Labour Party, currently the opposition to Margaret Thatcher's Conservative government. That party has traditionally practiced middle-of-the-road socialism, but its current leader, Neil Kinnock, possibly facing a general election very soon, is also facing a threat by extremists that could destroy him and the Labour Party. Tonight we touch on just a few examples of what's concerning many Englishmen. Some are quite frivolous, some outrageous, some anti-American. All of them aimed at the next generation of voters.
Years ago, and here's an example of a teacher fleeing England because of this.
Thus, non-competitive sports. Games without rules or scores or beginning, middle, or end. Winners, losers are out. Excellence is out. And so is at least one school principal who believed in it. Brian Dugan was principal of St. Jude's School in the borough of Southwark. The school excelled in sports and academics. When a number of Dugan's students won scholarships, the Board of Education accused him of practicing elitism, and he was told in future to discard all scholarship applications. He wouldn't, and he was suspended. Did you feel that you were not being ideological enough to satisfy the authority?
Absolutely, yes. This was the point. I either became more sympathetic towards the political aspects of education in London, or I resigned, and I chose to resign.
Dugan has left to find work in Australia. The Fenway Robson is also out. She is a 14-year-old high school girl in the borough of Camden. Her mother switched her school when she felt Nathanway was being victimized by teachers with a Marxist view of history. One teacher was discussing the Cuban Missile Crisis.
And he said the Russians had every right to send missiles into Cuba, because that was his personal view.
Okay, so the next two examples are going to be more hardcore. You want to go to the next segment? Or you got time for another minute?
Yeah, one more minute.
The councils have put out the welcome sign to every special interest. The Brent African Women's Council, already subsidized by the borough, demands and gets certain food changes in the schools, trying the patience of the borough's education chief, himself a dedicated non-racist socialist.
What do they have? Do they have okra soup? Have they got jollof fries? Do they eat fufu? And yam? Plantain?
We are providing yam, for example, at lunchtime in schools as a staple vegetable.
Personally, honestly, I went to my son's school and I visited, I went at lunchtime. I did not see yam or plantain.
Just because it wasn't there today, it doesn't mean to say it isn't there every day. And because there's a different menu every day. We've got five different
dishes. How can you justify the fact that my child goes to school, an African child goes to school, or you want me, in fact, I would not let my child go to school.
The main thing in this 60 Minutes is the ending, and that is the gay lobby in England physically attacking and persecuting everyday mothers who are upset about a book teaching children how wonderful it is to have two gay dads. And we'll play that. It's a 4-minute clip.
We don't have time for that this segment, so we'll cover that next segment. So we'll be right back after this break, ladies and gentlemen. And of course, here's the thing. I've found this very interesting, and I think you might find it interesting too, Luke, that if you talk about race, if you talk about sexuality, or if you talk about politics, you're automatically racist, homophobic, or an idiot. Isn't that interesting?
I never cared about them until gays with guns came to my front door, and it took me like a month to work out the officers were gay.
We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, we only have a few minutes to get through all these recordings. So, Luke, if you would be so kind.
Okay, last recording from 60 Minutes.
Homosexuality be encouraged in the schools. It hit a nerve in a community that had hitherto been supportive or indifferent to the council's policies. The anger centered on a couple of books, especially this one, Jenny Lives with Eric and Martin, a picture book about a little girl, age 5, who lives with her father and his homosexual lover. Gay parents' rights group turned up at the council meeting to complain. The council, with its labor majority, voted to have those hated racist police remove the parents. Bernie Grant is leader of the Haringey Council.
Mayor, I said I have not been supplied with a copy of the book, Jenny Lives with Eric and Martin. The question asks whether I support fully the council's homosexual and lesbian policies. The answer to that is yes.
There is a genuine feeling among the parents group that what is at stake here goes way beyond homosexual rights or positive images, that it is a direct ideological attack on the family. Another book that angers them is an American publication for age 5 and up, which includes a how-to on masturbation.
That's not what I sent my child to school for.
Children in school in Haringey?
Yes, if we're teaching, I'd say I'm taking that to school. There's no way I'm having my kids talk that rubbish. No way.
Why should it be left to us parents to teach our children what we want?
The defense of this is that they're trying to say that they're trying to teach the children non-sexism, non-racism.
But where does it end? Why can't we teach our children that? It's the way we bring up our children.
Do you think that there is political indoctrination going on in the schools?
Indoctrination. All these big words. I mean, I'm just a normal mum, you know. But they're using their politics with our children. They're not going to. Mine.
Out of order. They want to ruin family life.
Wait, can I just say that?
I, for one, will never, ever vote for them again.
When a small group from parents' rights assembled to hold an all-night vigil at the Haringey Town Hall, it was met by a counter-protest of gay liberation people bussed in from all over London. This time, the abuse was just verbal. Other times, the women were urinated upon.
You are the ones that want to come in and dictate to our children what's right, what you do behind your own doors is your business.
Women are not by any definition what the British call gay bashers, nor are they right-wing fanatics. They are or were Labour supporters, many of whom now believe that social justice gone haywire can be no justice at all.
Okay, well, there you have it. That's 60 Minutes America. Apology for the audio quality. It was off a very old VHS.
Okay.
Okay, now, I'd like to tell everyone, like, the people, the majority, are the 99%.
Have you gone outside in the wind or something?
There is a fan here which needs to be turned off. Okay, it's disabled.
That's better.
Almost, I'll get it now. Okay, good. Okay, so, I did help out Occupy Sydney the other day. I gave them the home address of the Lord Mayor of Sydney, whose henchmen started this new law to sue religious organisations. If you don't believe it happens, beatproject.org.au is campaigning for gay sex in public parks. When do they want it? Now. And any police officer who obstructs the right of gay people to have sex in children's parks must be taken to the Anti-Discrimination Board. Look at their own website.
Oh, my God.
Beatproject.org.au.
You okay? Can't make this up. You can't
I joined their mailing list and I found out they were going to attack Christians in the protests and do violence. On my Facebook page, facebook.com/greensvale, a long time ago, I predicted it, and it happened in the newspapers the next day. These are these people. Okay, now the other thing, so I gave the Lord Mayor of Sydney's home address to Occupy Sydney.
Do I have the right to have heterosexual sex in children's parks?
No, you cannot do dogging because it's a crime, but you can't claim you're discriminated against because you can't claim you're being discriminated against because you're heterosexual. Only gays have that privilege because gays are above God under law.
Maybe they're just trying to step in and protect their member.
Well, so I gave Occupy Sydney the home address of Clover Moore in her own handwriting from a leak from the New South Wales Election Commission. If your listeners go to tinyurl.com/Strathfield, that's a town in Sydney, they can see a video, which is just a bombshell. It shows that I'm also anti-Liberal Party in Australia, so no one can pigeonhole me. I download from a government website by pressing a single keystroke that information, okay? And then the government falsely accused me of cyber terrorism. And the leader of the secretive New South Wales Liberal Party state executive, Joseph Tanos, I've got a recording of him giving me a threat here, for this. I've been Korean National Police Agency, Cyber Terrorist Police, raided my workplace in Korea. And it was the government's crime of breaching the Privacy Act, 50 penalty units, for sharing the data without a password. It didn't do any hacking, okay? And so I fled Korea, the police, one day before the police raided my work. I fled Australia 3 days before they raided my house, even though admitting they're plotting to get me in the 60C search warrant. Next time we'll play audio tape of me falsely being accused of a bomb threat to bomb the Australian embassy in China after I did my burned passport MP4 video. They are coming for me, just like the other whistleblower you had on the other day. We had an audio trouble with that YouTube video, I think, about the Masonic order. So they're after me. And listen to them say it themselves. Okay?
Yep.
Also, they say they control the mainstream media, and when the time comes, they'll use it against me. And these Liberal lobbyists for first state government relations and consultants, their biggest customer is the biggest communist China Railways Limited Company, the biggest financial entity in China. And Barry O'Farrell, the leader of the Liberal Party, is himself saying in the People's Daily newspaper in China, we will help you get the rail contract. He gives it to his own lobbyists to get more money from communist China than Australia. And as state executive members, they have the power to pre-select or veto any candidate. So the Communist Party of China must approve who's a Liberal. So have a listen to what they say to me.
You've already been hunted down for the way that you've hacked into the New South Wales Electoral Commission website.
I didn't hack in. You know that
you've got it on YouTube, you dope, and everybody's seen it now, including the New South Wales Electoral Commission. That form is not public knowledge. So I think before you start making accusations and allegations that you ought to be very, very careful. We also know about all the corrupt activities that you've been doing in Korea. People know. Well, you should go and look.
I have an F2 visa. I can work anywhere I want.
Of course you can. And that's why you sit there and apologise to people in Korea in the language that you can hardly talk and speak, and apologise about the way you've treated kids. So if I were you, I'd be very careful. Very, very careful. A number of people... Well, if you don't know what I'm talking about, then you're really not a deal, you're a
deluded. You're very deluded. You're promised carbon credits to foreign companies.
I'm as deluded as you are. If I'm deluded, you're deluded.
I'll let the media. Nick, on Monday there will be a podcast and you guys will be toast.
So in that podcast, you should put up there that put your apology that you made to the Korean government and to the Korean people, because if you don't, we will also be putting that up for you. And we will also be telling the media about your activities in Korea that you have.
I think they control the media, and the New Zealand Herald guy who does all the stories about wonderful stories about, you know, North Korean warships coming into your harbour and everything. His name just escaped me. The guys wouldn't do it. They wouldn't do a story about two New Zealand schools. One is Wariaru in Auckland, sending their kids to work for profit for Jeju International English Village, a business. I was interviewed by KBS National News in HD on primetime, and the Jeju documentary did a special. It's all on my YouTube channel, right, about New Zealand kids being sold for profit, child labour and job ads for working children this guy was running. And the guy in Korea who ran this Jeju International English Village is a Democrat United Party member of Korea, blog.minjoo.kr/591, who makes the country's educational law, has a business selling foreign children. Just look up Jeju International English Village. And, I mean, they're selling New Zealand kids' child labour services as teachers for profit. And it's like...
See, this is exactly what I was just talking about a couple of minutes ago, wasn't it? The global ring going on here, and unfortunately, look, we've run out of time. If you've got, if you've got a website, could you plug your YouTube channel, please?
Well, okay,
get people to do that. You've got like 10
okay.
seconds.
tinyurl.com/homocopvictim. It's all my best videos, including on your show and others, and my YouTube channel's there. tinyurl.com/homocopvictim. Okay. People can use that forum to ask any questions and ask for any documentary proof they require about my situation.
All right, Luke, thank you very much for your time. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. Next hour, we are having on Suzanne Posel from Occupy Corporatism to have a bit of a news update. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere. But me. Welcome back.
Everyone but me.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which is good for the economy because now everybody can get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. And my very special guest is Suzanne Posel from OccupyCorporatism.com and the cohort, co-founder, core member of RealGorillaMedia.com. Suzanne, welcome to the program.
Hello, everyone. I just did my show. Now I'm back on.
You can't get rid of her, eh?
I'm everywhere.
Yeah, she's everywhere. Kind of like a scumbaggery. Now,
yes.
I was just thinking about that, you know, scumbaggery never sleeps. It's like Wall Street. And incidentally, that's where most of the scumbaggery hatches. But, you know, I don't know what we're actually going to talk about with you here, Suzanne, because there's a number of things that I do want to talk about that we can't. So let's talk about it.
We can talk about some of the crazy stuff that I've been through in the last 2 weeks.
Yes. Like craziness. So let's go.
It was crazy. It was a Wednesday. It was 4:30 in the afternoon. I was writing an article. My children were watching Curious George. Everyone was having a good time. My husband was looking through a magazine trying to pick out cars that we can't afford so he can buy them in his mind. And there was a violent banging on the door. And this woman calling my name, my first name, like she knew me, telling me that she was from DHS. And you and I both know in our line of work, DHS means Homeland Security. So I jumped up and said, oh, my God, why is Homeland Security outside our door? My husband looked through the blinds. She said, you know, Suzanne, come out. I need to talk to you. I immediately started searching for my phone. I usually know where it is because it's ringing, but I don't know where it is if it's not ringing. So I was frantically looking for my phone and going to call whoever I could get a hold of. I've got plenty of friends of mine who are attorneys because I got my paralegal degree down in Florida and I still talk to some of my friends, and I got attorneys all over the country. So just trying to find someone who could answer the phone who was still there to find out what I was supposed to do. She continued to bang on the door for about 30 minutes and calling my name. And then she left. And she left a card at the stoop right in front of the door. So we opened the door and looked, and it was, the card said Child Protective Services. So then my heart went from my throat all the way outside my body. I was literally, I was about to have a conniption because I could not believe that CPS was at my door. And I could not believe that she identified herself as DHS to begin with. So thoroughly confused. Nobody was going outside. No windows were being opened. You know, we weren't sure what was going on. She walked around. Where we lived was a duplex, and there were other people who lived next door to us. And so she was walking around, and then she disappeared around the corner. I found out later to get into her car because she drove through a parking lot. She came back with a police officer. Now the police officer and her began to violently bang down my door. And this was one of those, fireproof doors, you know, reinforced with metal on both sides. And I could have sworn that it was going to come off the hinges. Absolutely. And my children were freaking out, my husband was making phone calls trying to get somebody on the phone.
Let me just picture this. Bang, 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 bang. We're here to keep your children safe. Bang, 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 bang.
Yes, exactly. We have reason to believe that the children are in danger. Bang, 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 bang.
Well, okay. Now they are, you scumbag.
The police officer says, if you don't open this door, it's not going to look well for you. It makes us suspect that there is something going on. I said, do you have, who are you? I'm from the Beaverton City Police Department. Okay, what's your name and badge number? Why are you asking the questions? Because you're on my property. Okay, well, my name is so-and-so and my badge number is this and this. And I said, well, I'm calling the cops. Yeah. So we called the cops on him. I asked him if he had a warrant, search and seizure, a warrant for anyone's arrest. He said no. I said, get off my property. You have to open the door. We have reason to believe the children are in danger. No, the children were just fine until you showed up. Please leave. Since you don't have any legal right to be here and you don't have, you can't produce anything. And he told me, well, just open the door and come out here and talk to us. I said, no. No, I have like a Fourth Amendment right and a First Amendment right and, you know, a bunch of other ones all the way up to 27. So, no, I'm not opening the door. You don't have any papers. You don't have any court orders. I have no reason to open the door. You're on my property illegally demanding that I open the door, destroying my property. No. They stayed there. The whole thing took about 3 hours. And they ran my plates trying to, you know, find something, some reason why they could get into the house. Since there's nothing on me, they kind of got frustrated. My husband got a hold of my attorney. The attorney asked my husband to go outside and hand the phone to the police officer and or the CPS worker to get them to talk to him. And they both refused. And one of the interesting things is they never called me by my full name. They only called me by my first name. And they did not recognize my husband as my husband. They said that he could be anyone in the neighborhood handing them a phone. However, they watched him come from our front door and walk over to them. So who else would he be? They stayed for a little bit longer and left. Like I said, it took about 3 hours, the whole thing. We were absolutely freaked out. didn't know what to do. I started calling friends who have gone through CPS and dealt with these guys before and asked what to do. Every single person I spoke to said, get out. Get a truck. Get out. Go to somewhere where you're safe. If you can't get out, get the kids out. So my husband and I sat down and talked about it. We got a secure place to go. We rented a truck, and we spent the whole night packing up our stuff. And we literally took everything out of the closets, everything out of the bedrooms, put everything in the front room, and packed everything into boxes and bags. And we were out of the house by 8:59 the next morning before the court opened and they could get a court order and come back. We were driving away.
I remember saying to you, you know, you've done the one thing that most people who are involved with CPS in New Zealand, they're called SIFs. I found that quite an interesting coincidence that they named their child kidnapping service after a venereal disease. But every single one of them didn't manage to do what you managed to do, get out before they snatch off with your kids.
Absolutely. Oh, no, I know what they're going to do. I don't vaccinate. They're going to vaccinate them. They're going to put them on psychotropic drugs. I got a 2-year-old. Yeah. They're going to put them on adult doses of psychotropic drugs and then claim that the kids are having adverse reactions. Of course they are. They're on psychotropic drugs, lithium and Valium and Prozac.
Yeah. It's like Club Psychotropicana.
Absolutely. No, it's not going to happen. No way. We were in an undisclosed place. I just, you know, kind of set up shop and put everything together. Didn't do my radio show that week. It's been crazy. Settling back in and getting back to work was cathartic for me, just for some semblance of normalcy. And we didn't get a chance to say goodbye. My son had a lot of friends in the neighborhood, and it was unfortunate. But we had a lot of people call us and, you know, ask us what happened. In fact, I found out that my next-door neighbor worked for DHS for about 20 years, and she told me that she had never seen anything that would give her a remote reason to call at all. And she offered to write an affidavit, a character witness for us if we needed it. So far, my attorney has not heard anything. He has been denied requests to see the report and who made the report. He even offered a redacted version to not give the person away, whoever made the report, just to find out what was said, what reason they had to believe my children are in danger. But we have not gotten that. So now
this is the interesting thing, because don't you have the right to face your accuser?
Well, actually, no, you don't
have rights. You know, like, I remember people like talking about this. It's like, but they're violating my rights, and I'm like, ah! I think they still have rights. That's so naive.
No, actually, in the state of Oregon, you do not have the CPS can say under anonymity. It's protect the person who made, so that people feel comfortable making these calls. That's why the attorney offered a redacted version, but they have not complied. And it's been about 2 weeks since that happened, and we haven't heard anything. And so we're still vigilant, but we're kind of settling into where we are. But I have to tell you, I kind of look over my shoulder when I go out in public. I'm a little nervous.
You need to put those like in Congo, you know, how they have those motion sensitive machine pistols on tripods, you know, just outside, you know.
Going out with like some big Jackie O glasses and a blonde wig, you know.
Yeah, totally. Stiletto heels, the whole thing. You look fabulous in disguise.
Absolutely. It's the craziest thing. And out of this, you know, the first thing I did was start to research what was going on. And you know, a lot of things went through my mind, but I found out some interesting things about domestic relations here in the United States, and it's actually the same in Australia and the UK and Canada. Basically, what I found out is when you get married, it's a contract between the man and the wife, the man and the woman, and the state. And the product of that contract is the child, which is a commodity based on several factors like socioeconomic status, whether or not the parents went to school, what level of education they have, the background of the parents' families. There is a number that is devised, and so each person is worth that amount. And so the mother is given loose guardianship over the child to take care of it. But the state owns the child. And the father has absolutely no rights. Fathers, people who know fathers, listen to this. You have no right. The only obligation that you have is to pay. You have a presumed contractual agreement with the government for the child that you will monetarily take care of that child for its entire life, whether or not you have a job, whether or not you will continue at the current employment when you conceive the child. And you have no right to see the child for visitation. That's all up to the court and the mother. You have no right to the child at all, except to open up your wallet and hand over cash, period.
Yeah, see, and me and my girlfriend Sarah, we've been together for, I think it's now getting up to the seven-year mark, or it will be on the 23rd of August. Yay, anniversary. And I got engaged to her like 5 years ago, and we haven't gotten married because I know that. I know that if we ever wind up having children and we're actually married with the state's knowledge and state involvement, that they can and will at any point take my kids.
Yes. And you have no right to them. And if something goes wrong in your relationship, she makes the rules of what happens to you. Mm-hmm. And she can change them at any moment, and she can make up whatever she wants. I looked up paternity fraud. You know, it wasn't until the 1990s in California.
Hey, paternity frog, is that a relative of Kermit the Frog?
Paternity fraud.
Sorry, I just slipped that in there. It's not easy being green.
No, it's not. Well, this gentleman in California won on appeal. It took the appellate court. The woman pointed at him and said he's the father. He brought DNA evidence to show that he was not genetically attached to that child. And the court said, she pointed her finger, you're going to pay.
Mm.
And they refused acknowledgement of the DNA evidence. And all he was asking, he was petitioning the court to stop the child payment, the garnishing of his wages. And he wasn't even asking for restitution for back pay.
Mm.
He was just asking for it to stop.
Now, I was having a conversation the other night with a number of whistleblowers at their house, and we were talking about rights and how you don't have any. And Grace Hayden, who's a 15-year prosecuting sergeant for the New Zealand Police, turned private investigator, semi-activist kind of thing, she says, actually, you've got three rights: put up, shut up, or pay up.
Yeah, that's about it. And women, oh my gosh, if your ex, if for the men listening, if your ex, whether it's your ex-wife or your ex-girlfriend, ends up on welfare, let me give you a little hint. All of the money in the United States, folks, I'm not talking about other countries. In the United States, all of the money for welfare is taken out of Social Security. So when you pay your Social Security taxes, you're already paying for welfare. Then your ex goes on welfare, HUD housing, food stamps, cash benefits, you are now forced to pay again for these services, to pay the state back because she chose to go on welfare.
Right. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. After the break, my very special guest is Suzanne Posel, OccupyCorporatism.com and RealGorillaMedia.com. We'll be right back.
I got some so-called friends. Smile right to my face. All when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh no, no. Oh no, no. There's only one thing I need to know.
Whose side are you on? Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that knows whose side we're on. We're on the side of truth, honesty, and integrity, unlike some people. And my very special guest is the lovely, the fabulous, the hellfire missile-toting Suzanne Posel. And she manufactures drones in her basement, for which she surveils Barack H. O'Barry, the lord of the drones, the drone ranger, who incidentally, during his speeches on C-SPAN, tends to drone on a bit. Now, how many drone puns can I get into a sentence? I think I just broke the record. Anyway, what were we talking about? We were talking about the CPS, Child Pedophile Services, I mean Child Protection Services in the United States, and also the fact that when you get married, it is a contract with the state that the state owns your kids and you as a father have no fracking rights except to pay up, put up, or shut up. All right?
Absolutely.
Now, here's the thing. How do you tie the knot now without that knot becoming the knot in the noose around your neck?
Well, here's something funny. My husband and I, we had our son, and we were engaged, and we were living in the West Coast, and my family's from Florida, so they couldn't afford to come out twice for the wedding ceremony and the birth of our child. So we decided to put off the wedding, and then we had our second daughter. Our second child. And so we decided that we were just going to have a ceremony, exchange rings, but we didn't feel the need to sign a sheet of paper with the state. Well, we got a letter. I got a letter asking if 3 weeks after my daughter was born in the state of Oregon, I got a letter asking if my husband was the father. Where he is, how long he resides in the home, if it's permanent or temporary, how much money he contributes to the house. I mean, this full questionnaire, which I did not fill out and I did not send back because I do not recognize their authority. But after talking with some friends of mine who are in family law, we made the decision to go ahead and have a legal ceremony. So we went down to the courthouse and went and had it done. I sent them a copy, notarized copy of the marriage certificate with nothing else in it, just that, and never heard from them again. So that's the catch 22. They wanted to garnish my husband's wages and take their cut and then siphon it back to me, which would have put our family in jeopardy because I just had a kid. And I ended up having complications from the C-section, so I was not returning to work anytime soon. And his income was the only income that we were living off of. So after they take their cut, we wouldn't have been able to pay our bills. And so the only recourse that we had was to sign this document. And if I'd known what I know now, I would never have done that either. I mean, we signed an agreement with the state that our children now belong to them. And they created CPS in order to take over because these children are worth something. They're traded on the stock market. They're worth a certain amount of money. And they are investment for the government. So the government wants to make sure that their investment is taken care of. And that's what CPS is there for.
Go on.
it's just mind-blowing. And then I after this whole CPS thing happened, I looked into domestic relations. Basically, in the 1970s, they completely got rid of fathers' rights. It started with the New Deal with FDR and when they created welfare. And they started using Social Security money and the Social Security system in order to tag and trace everyone. And it boggles my mind because people who are old enough to remember before Social Security numbers, everything was going along just fine. And so then they put this number system. Everyone, literally, you become a number. It's traded on the stock market. You used to be able to go and look it up. And there was a YouTube video that showed you exactly how. But they've since scrubbed the YouTube video and scrubbed the ability to go look it up on the stock market. So it's very difficult to look it up. But I promise you, folks, it's real. And I had spoken to a lot of sovereign citizens and a lot of people in the sovereign movement. And before all of this happened, I said, oh, yeah, that's good and well. And I'll file that away as information. But I never took it seriously until I started digging into domestic relations and the rights of the father, which don't exist, and what the child is to the government and what the mother's rights are. And then I realized, oh, wait a minute, the sovereigns have it right. They are onto something.
Oh, they're onto something. And you know what the sad thing is about the sovereigns is that every single sovereign that I've talked to thus far is currently, well, here's the thing. You go into the sovereignty movement so that you can become free, like proper free, you know, not having to pay the taxes that you don't want to pay and don't have to pay, not wanting to have your kids taken off you because, yeah, and so on and so forth. And incidentally, every single free man on the land or sovereign that I've talked to is broke and under constant harassment by the police. So that's how you become free, by becoming bankrupted and constantly harassed by evil authoritarian scumbags.
Absolutely. There's a film, Ungripped, that anyone watching, and the gentleman lives in Canada, but it's definitely worth watching because this gentleman shows you exactly how he got himself out of it. He actually put a flag up on his property. He wrote himself a constitution, absolutely emancipated from the government and from the jurisdiction of the laws. Absolutely. And the police departments here in the United States are being trained to look for sovereigns and to, you know, get them under their thumb and get them in jail as quickly as possible. Harass them to any means or any extent necessary to get rid of them.
Now, that's the interesting thing as well. I always wondered what the logic was. Okay, I'm going to use legal methods in order to fight people who don't use any legal methods.
Well, I had a gentleman just on my show explaining, because it ties into the biblical rights and the rights that we have in imbued by us by God. So I said to him, well, you know, which God are we talking about? Because there's lots of gods. And lots of different holy books have different rules and regulations that everyone has to follow. But effectively, it's the separation between the individual natural person and the corporation which is created when you're born. And when you're born and they stamp your foot on that sheet of paper, that is symbolic and indicative of you stepping onto land. And then from that moment on, you're effectively lost at sea. Maritime law comes into effect. They don't know where the hell you went. All capitals come into play, and they're dealing with the straw man instead of the actual person. And every time you acknowledge the straw man, you have to do whatever they say. You're under their jurisdiction.
I really, really don't like these people. In fact, I think I posted on my Facebook just yesterday about the two groups of people that I fear. Let me see if I can find it here. It's basically the two groups of people that I fear
Oh, well, here we are, here we are. I now fear two groups of people, the gangs and the cops, who are incidentally a gang. And for the same reason. They're both violent, they're both dishonest, and have no respect for the rule of law.
Well, absolutely. Well, this goes back to a little bit of information that I found out last year, and I was going on every radio show I could find to talk about this. In the 1970s in the United States, Congress decreed that all of the police departments, not your sheriff's office, police departments are corporations. They all need to be corporatized. These are private security firms hired by your city to perform policing services. They are not the police. It is no different than Whack and Hut walking around the perimeter of a building that they were hired to secure. It's just the perimeter happens to be the city that you live in. Yeah. And they are not upholding the law. They are upholding the financial interest of the city. That's why if they get called, someone's going to jail. That's why there's money involved, or that's why there's monetary restitution.
Yeah, and this is why in New Zealand, a dude was attacked by his neighbor with a line trimmer, right? Nearly chopped the top of his head off.
Oh, my God.
And he called the cops. And the cop didn't even charge the guy. They're just like, no, there's no money to be made here.
Right. Right, exactly.
Yeah. All right. It's not their frickin' job to protect you. You're just a slave, okay? Slave dies, slave gets assaulted. Yeah, who gives a frack, you know? And it was the same with Shane Wenzel. God, I hate that guy, and I haven't talked about him for years, but I hate him so much. He's just an evil sociopathic scumbag who runs this kind of cult-type operation. And what he does is he uses the sovereignty kind of lingo in order to get activists into his fold, and then he gets them to work for him for free, because they're activists, you know, and they think that they're doing the right thing. And then all he does is capitalize on all of their work and stuff like that. And he's a violent, freaking sociopathic scumbag. I get him on camera assaulting my mate and myself, and he goes down on like 36 fraud charges, and then we're sending in the DVD to the police of the assault, and they say, no, don't worry about that, don't worry about that. He's getting charged with fraud anyway. And of course, about a year later, he gets released, and all his fraud charges get overturned. And it's also, incidentally, about the right amount of time whereby you can no longer complain about a crime that happened over a year ago.
Right. Statute of limitations. Gotta love that.
You motherfucker. You know, I hate the cops in that regard. And it's just, look, let's be honest here. Okay. If you're a police officer and you're listening to this, you're probably not a bad police officer. You're probably one of the very few good ones. Okay. Very few good ones. Do you understand? When people say, oh, not all cops are bad, most of them are. That's why you got recruited in the first fracking place, is because you have the propensity to be a violent, sociopathic, unempathetic scumbag. Okay? And I've met many, 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 many cops. They are either morons, invariably, most of them, thugs, violent, or liars, and then every now and again, you know, kind of like these little diamonds in the rough, you talk to one who's actually kind of a nice guy, and you think, man, I'm very glad that I found you, you know, out of sifting through all this entire, it's like finding gold in some kind of a mine or something like that. The most of it is just dumb rocks, and eventually you find a wee tiny infinitesimal nugget that is inherently very valuable. Okay, this is my perspective on police. I mean, and I have a lot of firsthand experience talking with many, many of them. Okay, so I know what I'm talking about here. Well, and if you are one of these good police officers, like police prosecuting sergeant Grace Hayden, is a friend of mine. She said that the New Zealand police are so corrupt, you will either become corrupt or leave, and she left.
Well, ABC News, I was surprised, broke a story in 2010 about them going after people who had low IQs. And people who had high IQs were not allowed to go through the process to become a police officer. And this was deemed acceptable.
Yeah, one of my listeners in Australia, Gavin, he actually tried to apply to be a police officer, and his IQ test came back off the charts. And they said to him, "Look, I'm sorry, we can't hire you. You're too intelligent. You'll get bored out of your mind."
Absolutely, they're looking for a specific type of person because they have a specific agenda. It has nothing to do with upholding the law. It has had nothing to do with upholding rights or constitution or anything. In fact, when I told the cop that I did, since he didn't have a warrant for any reason to be legally to be on my property and get off my property, and I'm not opening the door, he had nothing to say. He just kept banging on the door, you know, a couple of threats. It didn't bode well for me, blah, 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 trying to get me to open the door. But, you know, I thought back to Brandon Robb. Brandon Robb did not know that he did not have to open that door. And as soon as the cop told him to come out on the porch, he was done for. If Brandon Robb had not opened the door and not crossed the threshold, he would not have been sent to that insane asylum. He would not have gone through any of that. People don't realize just because he's got a uniform on does not mean you have to open the door. Just because they send you a threatening letter doesn't mean you have to write them back.
They're reverse vampires, okay? Basically, they have to invite you out rather than you invite them in. But it works both ways as well.
Absolutely.
And they will suck the lifeblood out of you.
Yes, I would have had to go through parenting classes. It would have taken a year. And I had firsthand account. A friend of mine ended up in custody. And I'll talk about this on the other side because it's a crazy story.
Yeah, indeed. Custody is not just something that you pour on your nice desserts. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Bear in mind, of course, again, as a reminder, this is a listener-supported broadcast. If you are capable of contributing financially to the show, and also there's certain equipment that I'm always in desperate need of. My external hard drive that was donated a couple of weeks ago is now almost full. So if you have a spare terabyte or 10,000 terabytes lying around that you don't need, please... get in contact with me through the contact page at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, and I'll give you my address so you can send that out, or I can come over and grab it off you. I need external hard drives, man. There is so much stuff. Like I record my webcam, record the audio stream, and also record the in-studio with a camera on a tripod in HD every single day for 2 hours minimum. Not including if I ever go on anybody else's radio show. Not including if I go out to public meetings and things of this nature. Okay, there is nobody else in this country, nobody else in New Zealand, who does anything like what I'm doing to the quantity that I'm doing it. I'm producing more content per day than probably half of the activists in this country combined. Incidentally. About half of the activists in this country have been on this radio show, and I produce content for them because they work really, really hard. And I try to make sure that because I've for me, making a video, making a radio broadcast, very, very easy thing for me to do, okay? For an activist who is spending all of their time researching so that they've got credibility and so on and so forth, they do not have the time to simply publish these works and content. And even if they did, they'd be publishing them to their own YouTube channels that only have a couple of hundred subscribers or something like that, and very few people would see it, whereas I've currently got about 7,500 subscribers. And so I lend that platform to these activists who give their heart and souls, minds, bodies, blood, sweat, and tears to save this country from scumbaggery. And I will not let them down. If you support that concept, that idea, that overwhelming body of work that I put in every single day to ensure that these people's voices get heard when nobody else in this country will do it for them, please, I implore you, go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, start an automatic payment through the bank account preferably, because then PayPal doesn't get any of it, or just make a donation or a subscription through PayPal. Just a couple of dollars a month. $5 a month is the average. You can do as little as a dollar if you simply just want to show that you're supporting and you just want to give something, but you cannot afford it really otherwise. And for those of you who have already donated, in fact, I wanted to give a special appreciation to Gert in Europe. He gave me a 500 euro donation, translating into US dollars. That's like $600-700. And it's currently basically all gone, because that's rent, that's food, that's internet, that's fuel, that's buying licenses for the cars and so on and so forth. It just suddenly dawned on me that that was the biggest generous donation that I've ever done, and he's done it a number of times. And I just wanted to give extra special thanks to him for his extraordinary generosity. I actually broke down in tears that day because I didn't know how the hell I was going to eat until it came in. I'm living on the bones of my ass, yo, because it needs to be done. There is nobody else to do it for you. Please support me, because I'm worth it. Kind of like L'Oreal Paris. And my very special guest is Suzanne Posel, who is also somebody who's really good at getting the truth out and helping people to understand the real ins and outs of what the heck is going on. The website is incredibly popular, OccupyCorporatism.com, and herself and her husband, very great and skilled, and people with integrity themselves, helped me to fulfill my idea of the real guerrilla media. Not to be mixed up with any imitators, any thieving scum or people of that nature who basically don't have any integrity. And speaking of which, we were talking about child paedophile services and what they've kind of tried to do to you. And this is, I was actually having a conversation with one of the whistleblowers the other night, Suzanne, about this very topic. And she's telling me these stories about how her children were molested by their father, and their father was kind of on the take, and it's interesting. Fathers don't have any rights unless they're the abuser and they've got the right connections.
Oh, sure. The story I was going into, this friend of mine ended up in foster care for a year. The mother did have to get herself cleaned up, and she's a wonderful mother, and she did exactly what she needed to do to get herself right and get her kid back. But while that child was in the care of the foster parent and CPS, and I met with this child while they were under the care, just changing the diapers, no abuse anywhere else. When I went to change this child's diapers, 2.5-year-old boy, I saw abuse on his genital region, and that's as far as I'll go, folks. I don't want to get graphic. That I've never seen before in my life. And it was explained to me that it was a diaper rash. And diaper rashes do not have lesions about 3 or 4 inches long covering the entire testes, the entire scrotum, open wounds that are festering. I couldn't even apply a cream like Desitin or A&D ointment because the child was in pain. I couldn't even use a wipey. I had to use water and a small cloth and had to hold the boy while he was crying to just clean up a dirty diaper. And this is acceptable. The mother is not, the father is not, but this kind of behavior is acceptable to CPS and the foster parents. And this woman was 65 years old. Her husband had just had heart surgery, and she had 8 other children in her care, ranging from ages of 6 months to 10 years. And those children, all of the money she was getting from the state was paying for all of the medical bills that she had incurred from her husband being sick. And that was all these children were, a meal ticket. And they were abused.
Yep, there's a similar story in New Zealand. Daniel Ryder, who is the only activist that I've met so far, and I've met many, who I will unequivocally say is a textbook hero. There were 10 children, similar number to what you were just talking about, living in a garage on bunk beds.
Oh, my God.
With a child, youth and family services mandated methamphetamine dealer who was also renting them out to local pedophiles, you know, doctors, nurses, lawyers, police, that kind of thing.
Oh, God.
Daniel went round to their place with his truck, lashed a cable around the garage door, ripped it off, and he saved all of those kids. You know, when you just take direct action. And guess how many explanations he had to give to the police or child, youth and family services about why he damaged somebody's private property and all of that kind of stuff. Nothing. They left him right alone.
I have a friend in Alaska, and she said in the winter months, these children go missing, 7 and 8 year old children in the tundra in Alaska. And they run away from their foster homes, and they just, that's the story, that they ran away. What child is going to run away in the middle of winter, in the middle of Alaska? 7 or 8 year old child. These children go missing. Nobody ever finds them. You know where they are? They're probably in Austria or in any of these child sex rings, you know, shipped through Colorado with Pat Stryker and sent off on Bohemian Airlines to God knows where. And this has to stop, folks. These people are not there to take care of you. They are not there to help you. If I understand that times are tough, and I understand if you need help with feeding your kids or maybe a cash benefit, but you have to realize what the contract in which you are entering into, and your children are not worth that. Go and get a second, third, or fourth job. Mow lawns. Do whatever it takes to keep yourself off of those benefits, because once you sign that contract, your children are up for grabs, and they are coming for them.
Yeah, it's absolutely right, and this is actually the subject for which I am most interested in. Out of all the subjects in the world, fluoride, chemtrails, New World Order, banking, conspiracy, none of that really matters. You know what matters? You know what really matters? Millions of children going missing every year, all around the world, disappearing into child sex rings that are run by your politicians and protected by your police and your child protection services. It is a global network of abuse, satanic sacrifice, sexual disgusting horror. It is the most horrific subject. This is why it is the most interesting. This is why it is the most interesting to me, because the horror of it is something that is inherently traumatic. And I'm very interested in trauma, because I believe that trauma teaches you something. If you're getting uncomfortable with this conversation, good. You should be fracking uncomfortable. And you should be speaking about it. You should be doing something about it. Because these children, even though they may not be yours, need you to do so. Suzanne Posel, thank you very much for coming on with me today. I very much appreciate who you are and what you do.
Thank you. Absolutely. Same here. I love you, man.
Mm-hmm. Love is a two-way street. And, you know, it's interesting. Love is not a finite resource, ladies and gentlemen. It's actually infinite. If somebody gives it to you, you can start to replicate it. And if you don't pass it on, it's almost pointless if somebody gave you love in the first place. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Pass on that love.